Okay, so we have a double parsha, and it gives us, as we know, the opportunity to do shvi of both of those. That's our policy when we have a double parsha. But it's also particularly instructive in that way, because as we've noticed, we come into this year a few times, maybe it's particularly about when it comes to shvi, that we find certain similarities between shvi of one aliyah and shvi of another aliyah. And here you'll find that there's a lot of internal synergy, a lot of back and forth synergy that we'll have today, particularly shvi of these two aliyahs. In this case, Acharimos and Kedoshim are very, very similar to each other, very much parallel to each other, and it's an opportunity to see how that goes and how they both kind of echo each other's themes. So to some extent we'll be able to talk about some of the psukim from both parshiyos at the same time, and we'll see how much we can cover in the time that we have. Okay, so the last aliyah of Acharimos brings us in the middle of the parshiyos of the Arayos. It tells us about the prohibitions of Arayos, and this aliyah starts with the prohibition of Mishko Zacher, and it's important to emphasize this is a very sensitive issue. This is an issue that many good people struggle with tremendously, and when the Torah issues this prohibition, and this prohibition is referring to a Maisa, it's not referring to anybody's orientation, it's not referring to anybody's inclination, and it shouldn't be taken that way. And the fact that the Torah uses the word Toeva doesn't necessarily indicate that either. Toeva is a word that the Torah uses in many different contexts, and they should all be taken seriously, but it's used in the context of Midos and Mishkolos as well. Rashi tells us later in the Nisali, it's used in the Navi in the context of Gaiva. Chazal understand here the usage to mean Toa Ateba, that it's something that leads people astray, whatever that means. But again, we're referring not to an inclination, not to a orientation, but referring to an action. And the notion that we have a struggle sometimes with various inclinations is one that's at the heart of the whole concept of Arayos. And so the whole parsha of Arayos that we talk about here, I think it's interesting to highlight, it's important to highlight, that there is a little bit of a unclarity, a little bit of a discussion to be had as to whether Arayos as a whole, the whole concept, is this part of the Chukim or is this part of the Mishpatim? Because we find indications in both ways. We talk about Chukim Mishpatim loosely defined. We understand Chukim to mean Dinim in the Torah that we don't really have a way of understanding. And we talk about Mishpatim as like civil law and principles that are more easily understood or accessed. But when it comes to Arayos, the way to classify them is not really clear. It's something that is a topic of some mixed messages, including in the Chumash itself, in a few places, including in this Aliyah. So just to skip a few psukim for a moment, we see the Pasuk of Vav says, "Ushmartem atem es chukosai v'es mishpatoi v'lo sasu mikol toi v'oso eila ha'ezrach v'ager hagar b'sochachem." So here we have chukos and mishpatim used together, used as if it's a parallel concept, or as if they're it could be either or, and this is part of what's highlighted in some of the discussions, that it could be called a chok, it could be called a mishpat. And in the Rambam we find differing usages and different implications, and there are many who address this. I noticed an essay by Rabbi Yochanan Samet about this, where he noted the fact that Arayos seem to be a mishpat in the sense that there are certain kind of widely held attitudes across many cultures about many of the Arayos, which seem to suggest that in the category of that which you would have come up with even if the Torah hadn't said it, so it seems to be a mishpat. But on the other hand, the way of explaining it varies widely, and the degree to which we can mark that correlation varies widely, so maybe that's why it's sometimes viewed as a chok. And he makes the point that the difference between a chok and a mishpat is not as absolute as we might take it to be. That's certainly true, because we know that klapei shmaya, everything is a mishpat, because every mitzvah in the Torah has a reason, whether we understand it or not, or whether we are able to access or not, has many reasons. But on the other hand, every mitzvah in the Torah is a chok, because no matter how much we think we understand any mitzvah, there's always more that we don't understand. And that's a part of the theme that will be emphasized here again and again. So in a sense, every mitzvah is a chok and every mitzvah is a mishpat, and it's all about our perception. So it's a sliding scale, and we can see how it's not so absolute what category should be used for what particular mitzvah. That being said, I think there's another approach here which is also very significant, that, and this is also a connection between Achrimos and Kedoshim, that when you find Arayos categorized as a chok, so one of the settings in which you find that in the writings of the Rambam is a comment that's based on Chazal, and it's actually a Chazal that maybe we'll come back to today. It's a Chazal that's based on a pasuk in Shvi of Kedoshim. So it's again the internal synergy. It's a part of today's agenda anyway, that there is a pasuk in Parshas Kedoshim which Chazal comment on. We'll look at that pasuk in context. But there is this idea that we're not supposed to say that we're not interested in doing averus. You're not supposed to say efshi bavasra chazir, for example, to say, oh, I have no interest in eating treif meat. I have no interest in pork. I have no interest in ham. Why would I ever want to do that? So Chazal tell us, no, we're not supposed to say that. We could say, maybe we should say that it's very interesting. It's very appealing. But it's the Gezeiros HaMelech not to. HaKadosh Baruch Hu told me not to, so that's why I abstain. So within that, I'm sure we've talked about this in the past, it comes up a lot of times. So within that, the Rambam in Shmona Prakim talks about that notion in Chazal. Shmona Prakim is his introduction to Pirkei Avos. So in the sixth parak of Shmona Prakim, the Rambam talks about that concept, and he distinguishes. He says that it's not true about everything. This idea that you shouldn't say efshi, you shouldn't say I have no interest in this avera, says that's not true about all concepts. That's true about what we call essentially the chukim, as he calls it, the mitzvot shimios, the mitzvot that we observe because we are obeying God primarily and only because we don't really understand them. So the mitzvot that are outside of our intellectual access, so to speak, perhaps if that's the way to say it. So that's where we have this concept of saying efshi, but I'm not going to do it. But when it comes to the mishpatim that we do understand and we relate to what they're about, so then we are supposed to develop a soul and a perspective that is in sync. So a person shouldn't walk around saying, oh, I wish I could kill people all day, I wish I could beat people up all day, but I'm not going to because the Kodesh Baruch Hu said not to. Rather, he should develop a personality and an approach that is in sync with those mitzvahs of the Torah. So in that setting, the Rambam distinguishes between the two. And when he talks about arayos there, he puts arayos with chazer and shatnas. He puts arayos with those concepts where a person doesn't have to say efshi, a person doesn't have to say I don't want to. It's perfectly legitimate for a person to say his entire life, the reason that I'm observing this is because HaKadosh Baruch Hu's tzivoy, and that's the whole story. So it seems like that's very relevant to understanding the possible stiras here. That as far as if we define a chok versus a mishpat, if we define it based on whether there is some kind of theme or reason that we can relate to, so then things can be very unclear. Sometimes we have a continuum which can easily take us one place or another and can easily open itself up to different perspectives. But concerning this question of whether there's an expectation that the Yetzer Hara, you're going to defeat the Yetzer Hara in a fundamental way, and it's not going to be there anymore, and you're going to completely align with the mitzvah of the Torah as your inclination, so that's where the Rambam is saying that that's not expected when it comes to Chazer, it's not expected when it comes to Shadnas, and it's not expected when it comes to Arayos either. It is expected when it comes to something like Ritzicha and Gezel, so there we're supposed to identify with that mitzvah and not want to kill anyone and not want to steal and things like that. But when it comes to Arayus, the whole nature of human psychology is that this is a fundamental inclination that's always going to be there, and there's no expectation that a person is going to overcome that. There's no expectation that that's going to go away. Rather, the understanding is that a person is going to observe the din because it is the tzivui habore, and that's the main point of the focus. And it's interesting also because, again, we'll talk about this in the end of Kedoshim, but there is a machlokas between the Rambam and several hundred years later, Rabbi Yaakov Emden, that when the Rambam made this distinction in the Shmona Prakim, so Yaakov Emden, who we mentioned, he died in 1776, so that's how you remember when the revolution was, so he died many centuries after the Rambam, but he has Aris in the bottom of the Rambam, where he writes that the Rambam, how could you make such a distinction? Don't we have this idea that by everything you're supposed to be fighting your Yetzer Hara, and that's the primary thing, and the more you have to fight your Yetzer Hara, the better, because the idea is that we say Lufum Tzara Agra and related comments, Makum Shabali Tshuva, Omdim, etc. So it seems like overcoming Yetzer Hara is a much better and more lucrative, so to speak, in a spiritual sense, much more rewarding accomplishment than not having the Yetzer Hara in the first place. So, yes, that could be true in terms of Schar, but the Rambam, when he talks about these Mishpatim, so he's saying that despite that, there's still an inyan that it's as far as who we want to create, we want you to be aligned with the value of not killing, of not stealing, of things like that. So that's in those areas. And then in the other areas like Chazer, etc., so therefore in those areas it's okay to say, I'm doing this simply because of the Tzivui HaBore, and then indeed the more you have to overcome that, so then the Fumsar Agra, the greater that is. So it seems like for that purpose, Arayus is also in that category, that the more it's a challenge, so the greater Schar there is. And that's really the primary focus, and it's not really in the category of Mishpatim as far as that's concerned. So obviously there's a lot more to say about these issues. These are very, very nuanced, tricky considerations. There's a lot to try to understand, but I think those are some of the points that's important to perceive as far as how the Torah portrays this. Hi.
I'm sorry, I missed that point. What's Rabbi Yaakov Emden distinguishing between them?
So he's really trying to not distinguish with anything. The Rambam's distinction he's arguing on. Because the Rambam's saying, if we say Lefum Tzara Agra, so if you have to overcome Yetzer Hara, it's better. So then, okay, better for a person to want to kill people and not do it because he has to overcome his Yetzer Hara. So the Rambam presumably would agree that yes, there's more schar for a person who has to have such a fight. And in the Hanami also, to get to that point, you'll get all the schar for the process of developing that instinct. But it's not about schar, it's about what kind of a person the Kadosh Baruch Hu wants you to be. So presumably when it comes to Ritzicha and Gezel and things like that, a Kadosh Baruch Hu wants you to be a person who identifies with the mitzvah and doesn't want to kill anyone, doesn't want to steal. And when it comes to Chazer, he's saying, okay, there's no such inyan of not wanting to, it's enough just to observe it because that is the Tzivui HaBore. So it seems like with Arayos, it occupies this unique space that it's grouped with the chukim for that purpose, that the Yetzer Hara by definition, by human nature, is always going to be there. It's not something that one has any expectation of conquering, but rather it's something that one observes the dinim because of the Tzivui HaBore. And for that purpose, that's how the Rambam puts it in that category as far as that's concerned. For other purposes, it has elements of the Mishpat, and that's perhaps where we see somewhat of a stira as far as this is concerned, and that might be one approach to it. Now, it's interesting that the next pasuk talks about something different. The next pasuk talks about bestiality. V'chol behema lo sitein Shchavtecha l'tamava, v'isha lo sama l'fnei v'hema l'riva, tevel hu. So here you use a different word. What does tevel mean? So tevel, the Rashi just tells you that it either is a word for niyuf and for erva, things like that. It brings a pasuk to prove that. Or it's a word for things being mixed up, for erbuvia. Rav Shamshon Ophel Hirsch, in the translation, that's the English translation of his German translation, so his German commentary, so it's hard to know, I can't speak for the German part, but the English translation of Tevel here puts it as dehumanizing. And the Gemara in Maseches Nedarim, which talks about what is both Toeva and Tevel, mean two different ideas. So when it comes to Tevel, so the Gemara has a language of Tavlin. So Tavlin is spices. So how does that explain anything? So as the Torah Tumimah comments, either you could take that as bitmia, you know, that it's a way of saying that this is tasteless, and so we'd say, what, there's Tavlin here, there's spice, there's seasoning, there's something positive that makes this appealing. Or you could say that it's not bitmia, it's more benichusa, and that it's saying Tevel as Tavlin, meaning that just like the seasoning is separate from the food itself, so too here you have a kiloim, you have a mixture of two very different things. Okay, so in any event, so the Aliyah continues to talk about. Yeah?
Could you just look at the first one?
With first interpretation?
Yeah,
but the Tavlin. She says Tavlin is either bitmia, you know, it's either right. Like an ironic reading, or it's a venichusa, it's a more literal reading. So it's either saying, what, there's some seasoning here? There's no such thing. Or it's saying, no, it is compared to seasoning, meaning that that's distinct from the food. So the Aliyah goes on to say that al titamu b'chol eila, so this is the Arayus in general, or a problem of the nations that came before. But titmu ha'aretz ve'efkod avono aleha v'atakih ha'aretz esh yoshveha, and that if the land is subject to the tumah of avera, so it's going to expel its inhabitants. So here there is a lot of discussion about what exactly this means, the theme that is repeated here, and the Ramban has a lot to say about this. The Ramban understands that Eretz Yisrael is fundamentally, mystically different than the rest of the world, and it is under HaKadosh Baruch Hu's direct Hashgacha, which makes it different, as he understands it, than the other nations of the world, and therefore it's more sensitive to Avera. Rav Schwab, his comments over here, Rav Schwab says, it's interesting, he tries to explain this in a way, says we don't have to see this as so mystical, we can see this as physical. It's still going to be somewhat mystical, but he says, as a mashal, he says, you might say, how can you tell me that the land of Eretz Yisrael is any different than the rest of the world? If you take dirt from Israel and you take dirt from any other country, it's going to look the same. So how could you say that there's something different? So to make it a little bit more understandable, it says if you take the physical matter of a brain and you take a physical matter of any other part of the body on the inside, so they're not going to look fundamentally different from each other. And yet we know that the activity that happens in the brain is worlds apart from what happens in the rest of the body, and there you have the actual locus of one's personality and one's soul and one's essence in the brain. So just like they could look the same on the outside and contain such radically different content, so too Eretz Yisrael could be in a similar category. Okay, the Mishnah Socher of Teichtal, the author of the Im HaBonim Smecha, so he has a comment here. It's interesting. I don't know. Teichtal, you're familiar with probably, because he wrote the Sefer Im HaBonim Smecha, like I said a moment ago. Im HaBonim Smecha, you know, was the work of someone who was originally of a very anti-Zionist perspective, and he changed his mind, and he became a big Zionist, and he wrote this work, which became a classic of contemporary religious Zionism. So it's interesting to read his other ksavim, where I don't know exactly how historically they fit in, especially in this Sefer and Chumash, which I think is a collection of different places. So I think some of them could have been written earlier, some of them could have been written later. So in this parsha, so he talks about a conflicting chazal, essentially, that there is a medrash in Eicha based on the pasuk in Yechezkel that implies that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Halavai hayu b'nei Yisrael ba'aretz afal pishim etamin also. That if only the Jews were in the land, even if they were, so to speak, sinning in such a way that would be metameit. So it seems to contradict the attitude that we're seeing here. So it's interesting. He goes through various approaches to reconcile. One is, he says, that I guess it's a little bit open to interpretation in this context, which averus specifically the Torah is identifying. And he suggests that maybe we don't actually know, that maybe the Torah is saying certain averus have this consequence, or maybe one averus is consequence, but not the others, and so we don't know. So therefore we have to try to avoid all averus, and that's certainly a good life policy in general. But it could still be conceptually true that both ideas are there. And, some of Eris have a particular challenge to Eretz Yisrael, and others can coexist more peacefully. And again, we don't know which is which. So we have to try to take care of all of our responsibilities. He also has other suggestions that maybe it depends whether one is intentionally trying to fight with God or one is not intentionally. Maybe that's the difference. And he has various chilukim here. It's an interesting discussion. And again, it probably does affect some elements of the whole contemporary Zionism question, and how this reflects is the shifting perspective. It's just a historically interesting thing. So then the next pasuk, which talks about the chiyuv of kares associated with many of the rayos, ki kol asher yaseh mikol hatoevos ha'elev v'nichrasu hanefashos ha'osos mikarav amam. So here the idea of kares, so there's a Ramban that's very significant on this pasuk, which just as a marmukah we mentioned to look at the Ramban. Now the Ramban talks about different levels of what onesh kares means. It's very significant as far as that's concerned, and he also implies that there is a greater detail in the Torah about the consequences in this world for Aveira than there is in the consequences in Olam Haba. And he suggests that Olam Haba, the fact that there is eternal reward for the Neshama in Olam Haba, that essentially is the default. That is kind of intuitive, because that's the nature of an eternal Neshama, while the other effects, that either the cutting off of an Hashem in the next world or the ocean in this world for Averos, that's B'derech Nisim, and that's why the Torah pays more attention to that. Chazal also have a comment here, Hanefashos Ha'osos, that the Kares is for those who actually do the Arayos. So Chazal say, and not for the Kravos, not for those who come close to other things that are on the way to the actual erva without the actual avera. So some point out, I turn to Mima as a comment, that this might be a raya for the Rambam, that we know this is one of the topics that high school students ask about most, that the prohibition is known in high school as negia, it's known in the halachic literature as kreva la'arayos, or chiduk v'nishuk barayos. So it's well known that there's a machlokas, the Rambam and the Ramban, about this, that the Rambam writes that all such activities are prohibited min ha-Torah, and under the heading of lo sikrivu legalos erva, while the Ramban understands them to be rabbinic prohibitions. So it could be that if Chazal need to explain this pasuk as referring only to the osos and not the krevos, that it sounds like the krevos are also subject to a Torah prohibition, just not subject to an onesh kares, and maybe that's a raya for the Rambam. So, speaking of which, so the next pasuk says, and we talked about this already this week, so we'll just reinforce quickly some of the ideas. Hushmartim es mishmarti levilti asos mechukim hatoevos asher nasu lefneichem lo sitamu vahem ani Hashem Elokeichem. So this idea of hushmartim es mishmarti, so Chazal tell us the Gemara Nivamas and Daf Chav Aleph, asu mishmeres and mishmarti, they should make a safeguard for my prohibition, and that seems to be one of the sources for gezeros midrabanan. The specific context there is what's known as shnios la'arayos, the prohibition for someone to marry his grandmother or his granddaughter, second degree relationships. But we understand it usually as referring to many, if not all, of the siyagim and gezeros drabanan that we have. So just to make a few quick points about it, some of which we mentioned already, some of which we mentioned this week, is that, first of all, in terms of how does this relate to Lo Sasser? So the Torah tells us that an understanding of the Rambam, that we're not allowed to deviate from that which Chazal tell us, including their new dinim, including their gezeros. So what's the role of these two psukim? So in some svarim, including the Ramban, in his responses to the Ramban, you find that Lo Sasser is talking about one kind of rabbinic enactment, and Mishmarti is talking about other types. So the Ramban, who thinks they're all asmachtas, the Ramban disagrees with the Rambam about Lo Sasser. He classifies them as talking about two different categories. You find that in a few svarim, but it seems like that the pashut pshat is it's just talking about different parts of the process. That Lo Sasser is talking about where Chazal's power comes from. That because the Torah obligates us to not deviate from what Chazal say, so therefore the Chazal have authority, Chazal have power, because we're told we have to listen to them. This pasuk is not the source of their power, I think. It is the source that one should make gezeros to defend the Torah. So once we know that Chazal have the power to address Klal Yisrael, so when there is a risk spiritually to Klal Yisrael, so Chazal are supposed to use the power vested in them to make gezeros. So it's coming from two different directions, that are two different aspects of the process here, that Lo Sasser is where the authority comes from, and this pasuk is telling us how that authority should be used, or even how it should be implemented in other planes and other levels. So I think we've mentioned that Mesillas Yesharim writes that this is also an obligation of every individual, that if somebody finds that, let's say, they can't walk past McDonald's without feeling a need to jump in and have a cheeseburger, so then they should make a gzeira for themselves that they're not going to walk past McDonald's. Chazal never said that all of Klal Yisrael has to avoid walking past McDonald's, because most of us can do it without feeling that we have to stop in. So it didn't rise to the level of something that Chazal were gozer on. But as an individual, if you feel that this is something which is a risk to you, so then you should take on the echrayis to create a personal fence. And similarly, the Shulchan Aruch writes in Yerideya, Reish Chav Ches, that if your local tzibur, your local kehila, makes a takana, so that's binding on the people that are there. And the Gra, in his commentary, writes because of this pasuk, which also seems to indicate that this is a different kind of setting than we have with Lo Sasser. We're not necessarily talking about people who are empowered by the Lo Sasser directive, but it reflects another level of this idea that whether it's an individual, whether it's all of Klal Yisrael, whether it's something in between, that when there are areas of risk, so then it's appropriate to make a gather of some kind. And it's interesting, looking at the Torah Tamima, so the Torah Tamima, and quoting various rushes to this extent, so he comments about the Gemara in Yevamos. He says, here is the koach. So I would quibble with that word, maybe, and not use koach. The koach would come from Lo Sasser, and that this is talking about something else. And the next Maimir Chazal he quotes to the similar effect is that this is an azhara lebezdin. So I think that's the point, that it's an instruction to Bezdin, that Bezdin has to do something to protect the spiritual well-being of the Jewish people. And Chazal, because of Lo Sasser, have the koach to do that on behalf of Klal Yisrael. And individuals or kehilos have the ability to do that in a different way, but it's all emanating from this pasuk. We also mentioned this week, so I'll just say quickly, that Rashi and Beitza and other sources, you find that this is the source for Engozer and Gezeira the Gezeira. And as we indicated, and I think this is the case, that it's not that this pasuk somehow conveys that one should not make Gezeira the Gezeira, but rather, the point is that the pasuk is telling us that there's a need to protect the dinim in the Torah. So Chazal, who didn't just make gezeiros without sufficient basis, who didn't just make gezeiros because they felt like it, they responded to when there was some real concern. So a gezeira to protect the Torah, that qualifies, while a next level gezeira doesn't qualify. So when we say this pasuk comes to implied to us, Ein Gozrin Gzeira L'Gzeira, it's not that it's phrased as a Losa say, it's that we need the Torah's go-ahead to make Gzeira in the first place, and we only have that much go-ahead, we don't have the go-ahead to go another level beyond. And that being said, then we do find that there are many exceptions to Ein Gozrin Gzeira L'Gzeira rule. Time doesn't permit us to go through all of them now. But, for example, very often when the question comes up, something seems like it's a gzeira l'gzeira, so often the answer will be that the chad gzeira, it's all one gzeira that happens to just look like it's in two steps, but it's all really one big protective measure. And we find other exceptions also, and it all seems to really flow from this idea that the question is just how significant is the risk, just how serious is the iser, how likely is it that we're going to violate it. So sometimes it's going to need a greater protective measure, which is going to look like it's a two-level kind of thing, and sometimes not. So when it's an average level risk, whatever that means for our purposes, then to go beyond and make another protection to that, that's beyond what Chazal have a mandate to do. But when there is a greater threat, either because the aver is more serious or because the likelihood of violating it is more present, so then we have this notion that we don't go further and we don't make a gezeira le gezeira. Okay, so we have just a very few minutes just to quickly look at the Shvi of Kedoshim. And again, it'll seem very familiar. There's a lot in common. So just to quickly look at it, the first pasuk starts off, Lo selchu b'chukas agoy asher ani mishalech b'pnechem ki es kol eila asu v'akutba. Right, so very, very similar. This could have just been in a pasuk in the last aliyah also, in the Shvi of Achrimos. Very similar kinds of ideas. This chukas agoy, so this is not the primary iser of chukosem lo selechu that appears earlier in Parak Yuches. Here, this seems to be connecting specifically the idea of the erva component of chukas hagoy as a part of the theme here. And we have a mitzvah of havdalah. So the pasuk chafei says, just to skip a little bit, v'hivdaltem bein behema hatahor l'tameya or bein ha'of hatameh l'tohor. So the Rambam understands there's a mitzvah to engage in differentiating between the different simonim. The Ramban understands differently. The Vilna Gaon comments that the order here, that when it talks about a behema, so it says ha behema ha tahora l'tameya, or bein ha'of ha tameh l'tar, is because the behema has simone tara, and an of is the other way around. So therefore, the first thing you're clarifying when you look at a behema is either it's tahora or it's not. It's therefore by default tameya. And by an oaf, it's the other way around. So that's why the Torah says, regarding an oaf, hatame, or if it's not tame, then it is tahar. Rashi here has a comment that this isn't talking really about what kind of species we're dealing with. Ein tzarech lomer bein paro l'chomer, but rather it's talking about bein shenishchad rubo shel simen l'nishchad chetzio. Is it talking about if the simen is mostly cut, as it has to be, or just exactly 50-50. So Rav Moshe Feinstein has a comment here that why is there a difference? It's all just as unkosher no matter what. So he says Rashi's trying to convey to us the importance of the tradition of the Torah Sheval Peh, where those dinim are. But the truth is there is a more straightforward answer, which Rashi himself writes, that when it comes to a cow or a donkey, Shari Magdon Vinukarin Haim, you can see what they are. It's very clear. You don't need a mitzvah like that. And as the Torah Tumimah comments and the Malbim comments, that the language of Havdalah means that things are basically similar and you need to try to figure out how to distinguish. If things are completely different from each other, so then there's no Indian of Havdalah and the language wouldn't necessarily follow. So here the next pasuk Kedoshim parallels the first parak of Kedoshim, so it's written in that way. V'yisem li Kedoshim ki Kadosh ani Hashem v'avdil eschem min ha'amim li osli. Right, so that's a direct parallel to how that parsha, the second of our parshios, starts. And here it's on this pasuk, if you see Rashi quotes, that here it's on this pasuk that Chazal have this comment that one should not say Iefshi. So here Rashi quotes, Blazim Razaria Omer, Minayin Shal Yomer Adam, person shouldn't say, Nafshi Kotza Basir Chazir, my soul is just repulsed by pork. I have no interest in wearing shatnas. You should not say that. I want to. You say that God has commanded, so that's what I'll do. See, Rashi here does not have erva in his list. The Rambam again in the Shmona Prakim does. But it's interesting. Here, the point seems to be that really this is, on some level, the ideal that we should say that it's because of the Tzivoy HaBore. Rav Moshe has a comment also on the previous pasuk about Havdalah, that the idea of Kashrus being mentioned here in this context is a way of kind of solidifying that notion, that there's that similarity between them. But the idea that Yidavka should not say, Yafshi, you should not say that I am disgusted by this. So what exactly do you mean by issuing that as a directive? So that the Rav Nosson Gishtetner in his Sefer on Chumash, he has a statement there which may make things a little harder on people who are working and out there in the world in general. He says that sometimes if you don't want to eat something non-kosher, so let's say you're dealing with a non-Jewish individual and he'll invite you to eat something that's not kosher, so you'll say, oh, I don't like that kind of food, I have an allergy, I ate already, whatever, you'll come up with some excuse. So he's suggesting that what Chazal is saying is, no, don't come up with an excuse, say, that my religion does not allow me to eat these things, and be overt about it, don't blame it on any other kind of aversion. So again, I think we have to have rachmanis for people who are in a position to say that, and who are inclined otherwise to blame it on something else. But still, his point is that when the pasuk says vavdil, that Kadosh Baruch Hu is saying, I will make you distinct through the observance of these principles, so that fits with his point. He's saying that he's only going to make you distinct if the reason you're abstaining from pork is because God told you to. If you say, I don't eat pork because I don't like it, or because I'm allergic to it, or milchik, or whatever other, I guess that wouldn't work, but whatever other approach you would give, so that's not going to accomplish this idea of avdil, and maybe that's what that Chazal is coming to tell us. The last pasuk, it seems like it's a little bit of a non sequitur on the surface. Like, what does this guy do with anything? He says, So here, all of a sudden, we bring in this particular practice of Ov Yidoni, and we point out how that is subject to punishment. So Shamshon Fal Hirsch has a comment over here that this in essence is kind of just telling us what we're here for, that you might think that, okay, I'll follow all the mitzvahs of the Torah, but I'll see this completely superstitious magical system that is directing it, and that's why I'm doing things. So then you're missing the whole point. So it's important to reemphasize that prohibition here, because even if one is keeping all the mitzvahs of the Torah, but the attitude is that it's for something superstitious or something magical, then that is going to undermine their relationship with the whole rest of the Torah. Okay, so I think we're just about out of time. We're just about done. So I wish everyone a wonderful Shabbos, and we'll see you, God willing, on Sunday. Everyone should enjoy their